Hello, and welcome to the Luna's Reading Corner podcast, where we bring your questions to your favorite authors. I'm your host, Lacey Lawaji, and New Moon Girls member Maya joined me when we chatted with Ali Condi. Ali is the author of the Matched trilogy, Atlantia, and her newest book, Summer Lost. We talked to her about her books and her life as a writer. Let's listen to what she has to say. Okay, so we'll start out with some general questions about your life as a writer. And one of the things that first questions our girls always ask is, what inspires your story ideas?
It's a lazy answer in the sense that I'm not pinpointing exactly what does. But I think most writers, we can get ideas just from anywhere. You'll be at the store shopping and something happens and you think that would make a great story idea. For me, there are a few ones that, well, not a guarantee, are kind of a common source. One of those is nature. Like if I'm hiking or running or something, I do tend to get a lot of ideas then. And also conversations. And I'm not ever having the conversation with the intent of, okay, I'm going to talk to this friend or this fellow writer or someone to get some ideas. I don't think I've ever actually done that. But I'll be having a conversation with someone else, like my husband or a kid or a friend or an acquaintance or a stranger, and something will kind of trigger and I'll get an idea for a book or a story or part of a story. And so those are the two that I can kind of point out a little bit. And also, of course, my life, like my past life, which growing up as a kid in Utah, I would never have thought I had an interesting life or one that anyone would want to read about. But there are a few things that I've drawn on that happened to me, or feelings actually are more common, things that I felt when I was younger or currently that I will use too for ideas.
Are you still in Utah now, Allie?
I am, yeah. I lived in London and New York, but I've been in Utah most of my life.
Okay.
Wow. So what do you like the best and the least about your writing?
So there's this great quote. This is a really good question. There's a great quote by Sarah Zarr. I don't know if you've read any of her books, but she says, "I hate sitting down to write, but I love having written." And so sometimes I think about that, because there are definitely days where I can't wait to get to it. All I want to do is write. It's super fun. But a lot of the time it's me just sitting down and doing the work, and it's hard. It's kind of, I compare it to running a little bit. Like you don't really want to do it, but at some point it starts to feel great. And when you're done, you think that's the best thing I've done all day. I'm so glad I did this. And so probably the hardest thing for me is getting started, even though I do it every day. It's still hard every day. But the best part is looking back at what you've done. Even if it's bad, or maybe you didn't get as far as you wanted, it's a good feeling of accomplishment to think, well, at least I've put some time into this story that I care about.
Do you stick to a specific schedule when you write, Allie, or do you just make sure to get some writing time in every day?
It kind of depends. So I didn't before have a really strict schedule. And then once I signed the book deal for Matched, it was my job. You know, I had to meet the deadlines. I had to get it done. And so before that, I did write every day. I was pretty diligent about it, but the timing varied. It depended on when my kids were napping or asleep, or I had a few minutes, stuff like that. But ever since Crossed came along, that was the book when I realized I'm going to miss all my deadlines. I'm just not going to make it. So now I have a babysitter a couple of times a week. And so when she's here, I do sit down and I'm like, okay, I'm paying someone to be here. I've got to get going. I'm pretty strict about that. But other times it's a little more piecemeal. I get the kids in bed. I sit down whenever that happens to be and I write. So it's kind of a combination of the two.
So do you just sit down and go for it, or do you like to plan ahead of time for your writing?
I do try to plan ahead in the sense that I always leave myself notes from the day before, the day's work before. I'll write a little note about what I was doing, because you think you won't forget, but you always do. Then I write down a couple of the questions I've been struggling with. So for example, I have a question written down right here in my notebook from yesterday that says, should name of this character go? Should she not? What would she really do? And I'm not sure what she would at this point. And so I'll write those questions down, make some notes. And then between the time I finish writing now and the time I write again the next day, I'll like think about them. I don't always get an answer, but they'll sort of be on my mind as I'm making dinner or doing whatever else. So that's the kind of prep I do. I don't have like a formal outline or anything, but I try to sort of let my subconscious work on it a little bit.
Do you have a pretty good idea of your overall story arc early on, or do you discover it as you go?
It's so bad. I know I have a lot of friends who are authors who outline, and I'm so jealous of them. I mean, they do a ton of work. It's not like it's easier, but they know what they're doing. And every day I have a friend who sits down, he's like, I know what I'm writing every day. And that is definitely not the case for me. I know where I want the story to end. And I have an idea of the character arc, like what I feel like should happen to this girl or this boy, but I don't really know how they're going to get there. So there's a lot of uncertainty in the process.
So before you were able to focus more on your writing, what other jobs have you had?
So I've had some really good jobs. The first job I ever had was I worked at a shave ice shack in high school, and that was awesome. Then I worked in a bookstore, a college bookstore, for 4 or 5 years. And that was a great job too. And then I became a high school English teacher. So I've had, like, I've loved every job I've had. But when I started, when I had my first baby, I quit teaching because he wasn't, he had to have a bunch of surgeries his first year, and I couldn't put him in daycare. He was just, he's fine now, but it was just kind of a year. And so I thought, I've always wanted to write a book. I've always written a little bit, or a lot, depending on the time. And I thought, maybe I'll just use this time with this little guy at home while he's asleep, and I'll just try to write a book this year. And so that was when I got a little more serious about the writing part of my jobs, I guess, that I wanted to do.
Did your experiences as a high school teacher sort of point you in the direction of writing for teens?
Yes and no. I'd always wanted to be a writer ever since I can remember. But I come from a very practical family. And they're the kind who totally believe in you and believe in your dreams and want you to follow them, but they also want you to not starve. And so, like, my mom is an artist. She does beautiful artwork, but she's also a professor at a university because it's really hard to make a living as just a studio artist. And so I think that gave me the idea, like, yeah, I'd like to be a writer, so I'll also become a teacher. And so I... But then when I started teaching, I just loved it so much, and I was also coaching cross country. Those are actually the only few years where I didn't write on my own at all because I was so busy grading papers and coming up with lesson plans, and I totally loved my job. But then when I went back to write again after I quit teaching, I think I was writing for my students. I had this very specific audience in mind. I mean, my first goal was to tell a good story, but I also could literally picture who I imagined reading it, and I think that was very helpful.
Yeah.
So what were some of your favorite books when you were a kid?
I loved the Babysitter's Club books. Does anyone even know about those anymore? I'm not sure if they do, but...
Maya, have you heard of those? I'm older, so I'm not a good person to ask.
I've definitely heard of them, but I can never get hold of them in the libraries. They're always taken out.
Oh, really? That's fun to hear. I loved babysitting, so I thought the Babysitter's Club books were, like, just the coolest. And then I read a ton of, starting about age 10, I read a ton of Agatha Christie's, like, murder mysteries. And I don't know why I got so into those. They're not super gory or dirty or anything. I think they're just really clever. And I think that was kind of fun for me to feel smart if I could figure out the murderer. And I really liked the dialogue. So I read a ton of those. I read a bunch of the books that were the Newbery winners back in that time. So it's been a while. And there's an author named Barbara Park who wrote, she's just passed away recently. She wrote for a long time. And I read a book of hers called Skinny Bones that I totally loved. So there were a bunch of books that were my favorites. We had no Harry Potter. But I love that now, and I would have loved that then.
Did you, your first few books for teens, you know, were written, were dystopia and fantasy. And I was wondering, did you, were there any particularly influential books in those genres that you read while you were younger?
There were, and it's kind of funny because I'm so old that The Giver wasn't even out when I was in middle and high school. So the books that I read were 1984 and short stories by Ray Bradbury. and A Wrinkle in Time by Madeleine L'Engle. And so those are the ones, because I think A Wrinkle in Time, although it's sci-fi, it also feels very dystopian to me.
Oh, yes, on the planet especially.
Yeah, yeah, on the planet for sure, and the giant brain. Anyway, mm-hmm. So those are the, I don't know if you've read that one, Maya, but I hope we're not spoiling anything for you. But
no, not at all. I've actually read it before.
Oh, good, so you know exactly what we're talking about. Yeah. Yeah, so those were the ones I was really influenced by 1984. I was reading that. That was the first, I guess, pure dystopian novel I read.
Mm-hmm.
Read A Wrinkle in Time, like I said. And I remember getting further and further in the book, and there were only so many pages left. And I thought, oh, no. Like, I started to realize this is not going to end happily. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that world is good and bad.
Yeah, I've had that feeling before, too, when I look at the remaining pages. I'm like, how are they going to wrap this up with this much room left?
Pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to move into some specific questions about your work, Allie, and we'll try not to to give spoilers. And if we do, we'll put an alert on the podcast notes. So you can go ahead and get started with your first question there, Maya.
Okay, so what were some challenges about bringing your newest novel, Summer Lost, to life?
Challenges. So I think the hardest thing, I have to say up front, this was the easiest book I've ever written.
Hmm.
I mean that in a sense, it still took a while, I still struggled, I still got stuck, but it just came easier than any of the rest. And I think a lot of that was because I was using a setting that was familiar. I didn't have to build the whole world
mm-hmm.
and all of that. But I also felt like the hardest part was probably that the emotion was very real and mm-hmm. very raw. And so sometimes I felt like, is this too much? It's hard to write this in the sense that I'm exposing a lot of my personal feelings and struggles, and so I wasn't sure. That was hard to feel like, is this safe to do? Is it okay to mm-hmm. put this out there? That was the hardest part.
Mm-hmm. So what made you decide to write for a younger audience after you'd written several books for teens?
I didn't actually think about it, which sounds really bad, but I just, the story idea I had ended up being middle grade, and I knew mm-hmm. she was younger, so I didn't consciously change it. It just kind of worked out that way. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, I got the idea for the character. She was mm-hmm. certain things were happening, and mm-hmm. and I realized, oh, this is a middle grade. Well, okay, that's what it is. So I just kind of kept going.
So did you have to travel much or do research concerning the novel?
No. So with Summer Lost, it was easy because I based it on my hometown where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this little town. I've never done that before. Like I said, all my other books, I've invented like the government and the world and the political system and the religious, do you know what I, like everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this one was a lot easier because I thought, oh, it's going to take place in my hometown. And I didn't plan that. I just sort of put her in a scene and had her start doing stuff. And I was really excited about that because I knew everything. Like, I didn't have to sit down, as I've had to do with my other books, and draw a map of where everything is. I just mm-hmm. knew. And the town where I'm from is little, and it's in the middle of a bunch of national parks, kind of. So it's called Cedar City, the real town. I changed the name for the book. And it's small, but it has a little university, and it's surrounded by all this beautiful geography. And it also, surprisingly, has this Tony Award-winning Shakespeare theater and festival. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was this kind of interesting, unique setting, and I knew that she was the kind of girl who would, like, live in a small town but have big dreams. And so mm-hmm. it all just sort of came together, and I thought, well, why not use my own small town? I know enough about it that I wouldn't have to do too much. But I did do some research because things changed. So I went back, and I have a friend who works there at the festival now as one of the education directors, and she gave me a tour of everything. And that was really helpful, too, because sometimes you remember stuff wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, I had this way, and that's not how it is at all. So, yeah, a little research, but also a lot of just memory.
Mm-hmm.
So you touched on this a little bit, but I'm interested in, you know, your decision to write a more realistic story after writing stories set in imagined worlds. Was that something that you made a conscious choice that you wanted to do, or how did you come to that point, I guess?
It wasn't a conscious choice. Like I said, I was, I just got the idea for the girl and realized, oh, she's living now. It just sort of happened that way. But I wonder if subconsciously I wanted to do something different. And I think I probably, I didn't feel like it. Like I wasn't thinking, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if I was a little fatigued of world building, mm-hmm. just because it did feel so refreshing to, like, say they got on their bikes and rode to the store and bought candy. And yeah. I just wanted to explain, you know, here's their means of transportation. Here's what their currency is. Here's the food that's available. Mm-hmm. And here's the history that made it this way. Also, they're wearing jumpsuit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
A t-shirt. So I think subconsciously I probably was wanting to do something different.
Mm-hmm. So what inspired you to write the Matched series?
Oh, so that series, I had this, I mentioned earlier that sometimes a conversation will trigger an idea. And in this case, I was having a talk with my husband and we were just chatting about just talking. We weren't brainstorming book ideas or anything. And we were talking about his sister who was dating this guy that we didn't really like. Mm-hmm. And he is an economist. So a lot of what he does is data and computer programming to run these simulations of stuff for his work. And he said, what if I could write an algorithm that matched people up perfectly and you just fed all the data into the system and then you found out who you're supposed to marry and you didn't have to worry about all the dating and everything else. Just worked out perfectly. And of course there's websites that like say they do that, mm-hmm. and online dating and stuff. But for some reason talking to him that night, the way he said it, I was like, and what if it worked? Like what if it was perfect and then started to fall apart? And so that's why I dedicated the book to him. Well, that and because he's awesome, but because he gave me the idea for the story.
Would you say that the world in the Matched series, like the society, is a utopia?
I think it started out trying to be a utopia, mm-hmm. and then it's absolutely not by the time we see it mm-hmm. in Matched. I think they did start out with some pretty good intentions, but it's gone very badly.
Yeah, that's kind of how I used to describe dystopias when I was a teen services librarian, was like a society in which something has gone terribly wrong. And
yeah.
Usually they do, usually like in the backstory, they start out trying to address a real concern or a real problem.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
There's a very thin line between utopia and dystopia, especially in fiction, I think.
Yeah. Definitely. So, what was the hardest part about writing your standalone novel, Atlantia?
Oh, that is a good question, because that was the hard one to write. And I don't know why. I never got tired of the idea. I was always excited about the book. But I think the hardest part was getting the point of view. So, I initially started it. If you've read the book, there's two sisters. Mm-hmm. And initially, yeah. I drafted it with both sisters' points of view. Mm. And then telling, like, they were both telling the story. Mm-hmm. And I realized partway through it was just not working, but I'd written like half the book. And so finally I had to go back, start over, figure out how we could still get to know Bay, the sister whose point of view we used to have, without her actually telling us the story. So that was the hardest part of that book, was figuring out, okay, whose story is this? Who gets to talk? Stuff like that.
And in that one where it's like a water world, what made you decide that that's, you know, where you wanted to go? Because if we do an imagined world that's more terrestrial, at least we have that basis of comparison.
Uh-huh.
So what made that, seems like a big undertaking, and I'm wondering what inspired you to tackle that.
That was also one of the hardest parts of the book. There was a lot of research taking place on living underwater, mm-hmm. and underwater welding that never made it into the story, but I just had to do, trying to picture how you'd build this. And to be honest, I think it all just came about because I was reading The Little Mermaid, mm-hmm. the original story, not the Disney one. And that story is so fascinating. There's this girl and she comes up, the mermaid, and she wants to be human, but she has to leave her sisters behind. And if you've read the original Little Mermaid, you know it has a very sad ending. She doesn't get the prince. She dies. There's a little hope at the end where it turns out she might get to earn an immortal soul. But the whole premise of the book is that mermaids have no souls and that humans do. And so when she's going up above, she's not just risking her life for this boy. She's risking everything because there's no life after death. There's nothing else. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really powerful. And so I thought, what would that look like in a dystopian retelling? And I started to build the underwater city solely, I think, because the book, The Little Mermaid fairy tale was set underwater. Mm-hmm. And then the more I got into it, the more I thought, with pollution and everything, especially where I live in the winter, we have just really bad air quality. Like, you're not supposed to go outside at all. And I thought about how close we are to being able to live in space, which is actually not very close. And I started to think, what would be the more likely scenario? And it would be to live underwater. And anyway, so I started to set up this dichotomy based a little bit on The Little Mermaid, and then it took on a life of its own.
So we have a question from our member, Mackenzie the Great, which is the username she has on the site. And
that.
She's wondering if there were, well, actually, you mentioned this a little bit when you said you changed the point of view in Atlantia from two characters to one, but she asked if there are any characters or major scenes that were in a draft, but that eventually got cut, and she wants to know what they were.
Oh, there's not a lot that I can think of. Because even like I said with this other one, most of the scenes stayed. The point of view just changed. So that was the biggest one, was Atlantia, where it had this other character's point of view taking place. I can't think of anything else huge. There was a lot of prison scenes in Reached where the three main characters, Kai, Kasia, and Xander, were in prison together. That got cut, but they were all terrible, so I don't have any. And it was just like, there they were, talking in prison again. So it was sort of like, it turned out to be a good thing, but there were a bunch of those, yeah.
So are the experiences in your books based off of anything you've experienced in real life?
Yeah, there's almost always something. Even if it's not a real experience, it's a feeling. In Summer Loss, the new book, a lot of it is based on just this feeling of sadness that I had as a kid. So the girl, you find out really quick in the book, this isn't a big spoiler, has lost her dad and her brother. And I didn't lose my dad and my brother, but that the year I was this main character Cedar's age, my grandpa died and I was really close to him. And then my baby sister passed away also within a few months of each other. And so I think that feeling of sadness, even though the circumstances weren't exactly the same, was felt very real and was definitely from my real life. And then like Cedar, like the girl in the book, I happened to make this just really great friend that year, this boy. And we weren't dating, we weren't together or anything. We were just best friends. And he sort of came into my life at a time where I wasn't expecting anything awesome. And and he was. And it was sort of magical. We're still very close, really good friends today. I ended up setting him up with his wife on a blind date. And so I'm responsible for all his happiness. But there's But that was also a feeling. A lot of the stuff they do in the book, my friend and I never did together. We never worked at the festival together. We never tried to solve a murder mystery together. None of that. But the feeling is all really drawn from what I felt at that age.
Are there any messages in your books that you would like your readers to see?
Oh, that's such a good question. So I did teach high school English, and I don't know if that's why, but I have this almost reaction to, I do not want to put any messages in my books because I spent so many years teaching people how to find messages in books, and it's not very fun actually for anyone. And so, no, like there's no message that I set out to write. I want the readers to enjoy the story. I'd really love it if they felt like something rings true, or if they see themselves in the book or feel like, oh, this is helpful, like, she understands how I feel in some small way. But I do realize after I'm done writing the book, I realize, oh, this was a book about grief and love. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like there are things that I think come through that I don't intentionally set out to put in the story, but every book is about something.
Yeah.
And I think that's always interesting to see. For me, when I'm finished, I look back and think, oh, I thought I was writing a book about, you know, a girl who has a best friend, but really I'm writing about this. So
yeah,
it does happen, definitely.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that, as I also wrote a lot of stories before, so.
Oh, cool. And have you been that way too, Maya, like at the end?
Yeah.
So we have just a few more closing questions before we wrap up. One is from our member, Jonah Iris, and she is wondering, what advice do you have for young writers?
So I just taught a writing workshop in Wisconsin, and I had the most fun writing just young authors. They were brilliant and amazing. And they asked this question too, and I hesitate to answer it because I don't want to mess anyone up. I feel like a lot of people, young writers, know what they're doing. And so if anything I say doesn't sound good, just ignore it. But I feel like you should read a lot, and that's a very mm-hmm. common answer. Sometimes people say, well, I get my stories from movies or TV shows or songs, and I'm totally into that. I mean, I love all those things, and I love watching sports. I feel like I get a lot of my story ideas, too, from watching athletic events because there's such high stakes and great backstories. So I'm not discounting those. But if you're not spending a lot of time with the written word, you don't know how to get your feeling and your emotion and your plot across the way that you need to enable to be a successful writer. Mm-hmm. And so I do think you need to spend a lot of time reading as well in order to get that sense of wordplay unique to you and the way you want it to sound. So that's one thing, and that's a really common piece of advice, I know. But the other thing I heard author Beth Revis say once when she and I were on a panel together is she said, I always tell people, if you have the choice to do a really exciting thing or to sit down and write, you should always do the really exciting thing. And I think that's true. I think that's great. But I'd add to that too, if you have the chance to kind of do nothing or sit down and write or procrastinate and sit down and write, you should sit down and write. You know, usually the answer is sit down and write. Yeah. But if it's do something or be with someone important or you feel like you should just engage with your family or go on a walk, listen to that. You know, go do that so that you have that creative inspiration and feeling and emotion for when you do write.
Mm-hmm. So just a follow-up question with that. Would you say that you've ever been inspired by, for example, a piece of art or like a material or something that you own?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't know that I have initially. Like, I haven't looked at something I've owned and thought, oh, I have a story idea for this. But I definitely get ideas as I'm writing the story from material things. So, for example, in writing Matched, I didn't set out to include the Do Not Go Gentle poem in it by Dylan Thomas. But then as I kept writing, I thought, oh, I should use that poem. And then that gave me a ton of inspiration for different parts of the plot. And there's a painting, a piece of art in there too, that I use that especially it comes up a lot more in Cross, but it is in the first book. And that inspired part of the plot. So I think it comes pretty early in the process, not at the beginning, but absolutely. And songs too. I'll hear a song and think, oh, that's perfect for this book, if that makes sense.
I'm really interested in what Beth Reva said, because I think that there's a lot of this idea that if you want to be a writer, you have to turn down the opportunity to do other things. And I remember when I was in a college writing class, we read this essay by Annie Dillard, and I don't remember the name of the essay, but she was basically talking about, you know, the discipline of being a writer. And if you want to do it, it means giving up spending time with your family or going to the fireworks or whatever the case may be. And I remember that essay, like, just inspired so much debate in the class, because there were a lot of people who said, what do you have to write about if you don't go out and experience those things?
Yeah, no, I loved when Beth said that. I thought, that's true. You know, you rarely get inspiration from your own writing. You have to you have to go out and find other sources and fill that well so that you can create things of your own.
Mm-hmm. So do you have sort of a follow-up to the advice for young writers? Do you have advice for when you get stuck? A lot of girls talk about, you know, having the trouble where they start a story but they have trouble finishing it.
Yeah. Oh, that happens to me all the time, and it did happen to me before it was published and still happens now. But I do, I mean, at the end of the day, I sort of just have to sit down and do it. Mm-hmm. But there are a few tricks that I've learned. There's, if I'm super stuck, I'll go for a walk if I can. that getting outside is helpful. And I have a friend who recently said it in a really great way. We were going on a hike. She's not a writer, but she's a very creative person. And she said, I feel like when I get outside, I start to see texture again. And I think it's a different way of thinking and being in the world when you're outside, because you're not in a controlled environment. Unexpected things could happen. Even if it's a walk around your block, you don't know exactly, you know, if a dog will run across. There's just little things. Mm-hmm. It's not scary. It's not this crazy out of your comfort zone thing, but there is something a little different. I think travel, if you can, so if you're really, really stuck, just go even a town 10 minutes over and go through, walk around. Like that kind of jogs you out of your funk. And then worst case scenario, I'll say, okay, I'm going to put this book down. I'm going to walk away and I'm never going to come back to it. And I've only stayed away from a book once.
Wow.
That I haven't gone back to. Eventually I've always gone back to like something has come loose in my brain and I've been able to go on. That said, that's all recent. When I was younger, I wrote tons of beginnings and no endings. And I think that's okay too. I don't know that that's a bad thing to play and explore. I think the worst thing you can do to a young writer is take the sense of fun out of it.
So was that beginnings but no endings?
Yeah.
Would you say that you enjoy writing prompts, for example, so that you can start writing stories from them later?
I used to give a lot of writing prompts as a teacher, and those were super fun, and I would do those with my students. But I don't tend to do them on my own. Usually I'm writing a scene from a story, or I'll get an idea for a book and I'll write the first 3 or 4 chapters so that when I am able to work on that novel, I have something there. So I guess in some sense I do give myself writing prompts in the sense that I have an idea, but I don't sit down with a book of writing prompts and go through them. I like to do it. I just don't seem to unless I'm assigned it. So.
The questions that you ask yourself at the end of your writing sessions are kind of prompts, though. They're like prompts that are related directly to your work in progress.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
So what are you working on now?
Oh, so I'm working on a novel that is another young adult novel, and it's set, I think it might be a fantasy, but there's not any magic, which is different for me. So world building, but not a dystopia. And there's 2 main characters. I tend to do multiple points of view, I've noticed. And so I feel like this might be the right decision for this book because I'm closing in on a first draft a little bit. But who knows? Maybe I'll have to rewrite it. But it's kind of all I can say because it's so new at this point. But, yeah, young adult again, strong female character. There's kind of a mystery in the sense that they're trying to figure out a puzzle that is – very difficult, but there's also a lot of other stuff going on.
Well, I'll definitely be sure to read it when it comes out.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Maya.
Is there a an approximate release date on the horizon, or
it's not.
Is that too far out? Too far out for that?
Yeah, I'm hopefully turning it into my editor, and then she will tell me what she feels like she wants to do with that, because she has to fit it in with her existing schedule. So she's great, but yeah, we don't, she's kind of just said, you know, send it to me and then we'll talk. So that's where we are. Yeah. I don't really know. I hope 2017, but it could be, who knows.
How long do you usually spend on the revision process? Usually that comes up in the coursework conversation and I realize it hasn't. So I'm curious to hear a little bit about that.
It's so different for every book. So my editor is named Julie Strauss-Gable. And she's a brilliant editor. She's fantastic. She's John Green's editor and Tahereh Mafi's and Adam Gidwitz. She used to be Gail Forman's. Just a bunch of really great authors she works with. And the New York Times recently did an article about her, about how hard she is. Not hard to work with. She's literally the nicest person I've ever met and is kind and never puts you down. But she's extremely thorough and demanding. She'll never make you feel bad, but she'll send you a 9-page letter of stuff that you need to fix, and she won't tell you how to do it. She makes you do the work. She just says, you know, you should probably increase tension throughout the book, period. You know, she asks these questions. And so she's really hard, but you feel like you have the best, you did the best you could by the time you're done working with her. I love that. So there have been times where she sent me an editorial letter and I said, Julie, would it actually be easier for me to just delete the file and rewrite the entire book? And she has said, yeah, I think it would be. So that was the hardest one. That was like a 9-month revision. But then with Summer Lost, she called to tell me what she thought of the book. And of course I was like, here we go. I love her. I don't want to work with anyone else ever, but this is going to be brutal. And she just said, Allie, you know how usually you bake me a cake and I tell you, I like this cake, but I want you to bake me a new cake with different ingredients and or with the same ingredients, but a whole new cake. And I said, yeah. And then I waited for her to say the thing, the horrible, you know, all the stuff I needed to fix. And she said, this time I just need you to frost the cake.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, that was so cool and so exciting to me. So with Summer Lost, it was a short revision process, just a couple of months. So it really just depends on the book. I never have a clue what she's going to say. But once she says it, I always feel like she's right.
So do you have like word count goals, for example, for your books or page count goals?
Not really. I do tend to end up in the target area probably around 80,000 words for a first draft for a young adult novel. It was shorter for Summer Lost. I just was sort of writing that one since I hadn't written a middle grade before. Just, I thought it'll end when it ends. And that was about 45,000 words. And that is apparently about right for middle grade.
So,
I kind of have it in my mind, but also not a concrete one.
So, how much time do you usually take to write a book, like minus the revision process?
So to get like a first draft or a full draft, not a first draft, that's good enough for my editor and agent to read, that can take anywhere. The longest has been 18 months and the shortest has been 6.
Wow.
So it depends on the story. Yeah.
Well, Allie, we're nearing the end of our official questions, but is there anything that you wanted to talk about that you didn't get a chance to during our interview today?
No, I mean, you guys, those are great questions. It was so fun to have Maya on and all the reader questions. Those were great. It was very fun to talk about.
Yeah, we
everything you brought up. So I don't know. I don't think I have anything else.
Yeah,
Maya, did you have any last questions that you wanted to ask before we wrap up?
No, we were pretty thorough, I think.
Yeah, I guess I just want to say a huge thank you to anyone who reads my books and spends time with the characters. I'm just very grateful. I love this job, and without the readers, there's just no way I'd have it. So I just want to express appreciation to them.
Well, thank you. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us and, by extension, our members at New Moon Girls. I know that they really love hearing from the authors that they read. So thank you for that as well.
Oh, no problem. It's been an honor to be on. I really appreciate the invitation.
All right. Well, thank you. I'll let the two of you go and enjoy the rest of your day. I don't know if it's as hot there as it is here.
It's like 93. I don't know if that's bad.
That's similar to what it is here. It's 91 here. How are you doing where you are, Maya?
Well, I only know Celsius, but I think it's raining and 16 degrees.
Oh, that sounds a little cooler.
Yeah, a little bit cooler.
Well, it was great to meet you both via phone. I'm so great. Glad that you could be on the call, Maya.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed this interview with you.
Well, great, me too. Thank you guys both so much.
Yes, thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Luna's Reading Corner podcast. Make sure to visit Luna's Reading Corner on the New Moon Girls member site for even more book and reading-related goodies. Luna's Reading Corner is a members-only area of New Moon Girls, so make sure you are logged in to get there. Until next time, happy reading!